Welcome to Ray and Tay Today. Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. Come on and join the ride and the adventure. Give us a call. Let's talk sports. 718-664-9098. Like always, shoot us your emails. We got to get some on the air, Ray. They're filling up. People are talking of sports. So we definitely got to read them. Shoot us up at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Like always, check out rayandtaytoday.com. Tweet at us at rayandtaytoday. Like us on Facebook and check us out on YouTube. Ray and Tay Today. Ray, tell them how it is globetrotting and let us know what we're talking about on a very busy show. A lot of sports.
Yeah, we got a lot of sports to talk about. So we've got the breaking news here with New York sports fans are not going to want to hear this with Raymond Felton. We'll get into a little bit of what's going on there. We've got some other breaking news in the world of sports we'll get into. Guess what, folks? We're right around the corner. So we're going to have some NFL Combine talk. We're going to have some NCAA talk, NCAA
basketball. How fast is your 40, shake man? Up. How fast is your 40?
Well, Jadeveon Clowney, Johnny Manziel put up some good 40s, but now they're talking about Blake Bortles might go number one. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about college basketball. We'll talk about pro basketball. So we've got quite a little show to talk about.
Yeah, man, I'm hyped up. So, like you said, I guess we'll start with, you know, the breaking news and work our way back from there. Raymond Felton, point guard of the Knicks, he sort of told the Knicks in the post game about a week and a half ago that he had just been going through some things and having a rough season, and then things came out in the paper, I believe, sometime last week that he was getting separated or going through a divorce with his wife. And I guess now it appears that he turned himself in because his wife had turned in a gun and, you know, that she said was, you know, his, and that said that he had threatened her with it. Now, we know about Plaxico Burress, and we know about the gun laws in New York City, and New York very strong. We just got to let it play out, you know, and I just hope, you know, whatever needs to happen needs to happen. But what do you think about this, Ray? And then how do you think it affects not just Raymond, the Knicks' future, the rest of this season, his potential contract, or if he'll get suspended? I mean, this is going to be interesting to see what the commissioner does and just how it all plays out. It's got a lot of levels.
Oh, look, I, you know my opinion. The Knicks are screwed for the next year and a half. So, to me, it doesn't make that much of a difference. It looks like the Knicks are looking at Dante Jones, and the Knicks are looking at Jimmer Fredette if he gets cut and or bought
Lester
out.
Lester Hudson, too, is finishing up the Chinese basketball season. That's another guard. He used to play with the Timberwolves. So
that's big left to you. So, look, the bottom line is for the Knicks will be – I don't want to say that they'll be fine. The Knicks will be what they are, regardless of Raymond Felton. The Knicks is just a bad team that needs to clean up that roster and get from out from under that salary cap noose that they have. I'm more worried about Raymond Felton.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. I met him. You know, I did that charity event. Worked out great with him and the boys and the Boys and Girls Club. He's got a great heart, and I know he likes to give back to the community where he is and where he's from. And so Raymond's a really nice guy. I don't know if what's being alleged is true, but if it is, you know, New York City's got really, really, like you said, really, really strict laws, and Plaxico Burress went to jail for 2 years. So you know, I'm more worried about Raymond than I am for the Knicks because, like I said, the Knicks are not that good regardless. So I hope everybody gets their time to plead their case and gets their day in court. And we'll just have to see where this goes. But if it's true, if the allegations are true, Michael.
Well, you know, our lawyer and friend to the show, our Roger Cossack, Gary Lesser, G Money, said that this could be anywhere from 2 to 4, 1 to 3. He also pointed out to me on a phone conversation that Felton's wife is a Fordham law student and or graduate or, and she's kind of very credible and respectable. So see what that turns out to be. I don't know. So let me ask you this. I don't know if you saw it, but, going backwards, we got a shout out, Dale Earnhardt Jr., wins the Daytona 500. You got to feel good for him. The season is starting for NASCAR, and Ray and Tay, we touch on NASCAR, but Jimmy, my man Jimmy comes in fifth. I don't know what your thoughts were about Dale Earnhardt winning and just the three car running again. What did you think about NASCAR and the start of the season for them?
So it's funny because Dale Earnhardt Jr. has gotten away with his name being so valuable, and his performance hasn't always kept up with that. So I'm actually glad that he won something, and he won the Daytona 500 because he was in a serious drought. So he had a decade-long drought. Even though he's the most popular driver in NASCAR, it's been 10 years since he's won the Daytona 500. So good for him for winning. And how ironic is it that his father's number was pulled out of retirement? And, the number three car is going around the track. So that was interesting, too.
Justin Dillon?
Dillon, yeah. Nice way for NASCAR to kind of bounce back. The most popular driver, Austin Dillon.
And that's Ray Childress's grandson, right? So that's, it is interesting. It's fascinating. And just
family.
Real quick, as we're going through, we got to just put a bow on Sochi. The Russian Federation, winds up, sort of in first place with the medals, America second, Norway third, Canada fourth. Did you see the closing ceremonies? What did you think? And did it get you excited for the stretch run in hockey and or the Summer Olympics in 2 years in Brazil, Rio de Janeiro?
So I didn't see the ceremony. So you have to tell me what you thought about that. It was interesting that Putin apologized to his country because they didn't do enough work at the games, but the short answer is yes. I'm very excited about Olympics in Brazil for a few reasons. Number one, I want to see how Brazil handles it, right? They got the World Cup now in 2014 and then the Olympics in 2016. So this is Brazil's coming out party like China had, in their Olympics in Beijing in 2008. So yes, definitely want to see it. And two, it'll be more or less broadcast live. So we won't have to do this tape delay stuff where you see stuff in the morning, but then they replay it at night. So NBC is going to be able to broadcast live from Rio.
And the first ever Olympics, right? First ever in South America. That's amazing.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I guess Argentina, Brazil, Chile, nobody's ever had one. Yeah, good for them.
This is historic on many levels. So, like you said, a huge boom with the World Cup and then the Olympics, sort of back-to-back, belly-to-belly. You got to be excited about that. Real quick, Ray, spring training has started. It's starting. Yankees are starting to play college kids, and then, everything gets going. What'd you think about Gardner? 4 years, $52
million. Yankees have Yes Money Network, so I can't really count their money because they're a different breed. Maybe them and the Dodgers. But to me, Gardner is good, but he's not $13 million a year good. I mean, I think he's a solid role player. I used to joke that he's a one-tool athlete, that he's just got steam. He's just got legs. So,
well, weren't we supposed to be saving money?
A little harsh.
Didn't we have a sort of a budget? I mean, what happened to that?
Yeah.
We don't sign Cano, and then we spend crazy with these other guys. What are your thoughts on that? Because I'm a little surprised.
To me, and again, I don't count anybody's money. So I'm not mad at Gardner. Go get yours. Go get your money, right? But
I
don't know that he's the best left fielder out there. I mean, should we really be putting our money into Brett Gardner for the next 4 years? So we got Gardner, Beltran, and Ellsbury locked up for the next – well, I guess Beltran is 3, Gardner is 4, and Ellsbury is 7. So that's the outfield. That's the outfield for the next – for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and then baseball sort of put in this Buster Posey rule, and they're still worried – got to get real clarification on it in terms of the collisions with the catcher at home. It's supposed to be to protect the catcher, but, there's still some, they still have to work out some details, and we'll see in spring training in terms of if, the guy can't run out of line so much, but what if it's a natural collision and he lunges forward. And so they were talking about it today that, people are going to look at it as like the Buster Posey rule, but, you can't have a franchise catcher, I guess. I don't know. It's sort of weird, right, because it's baseball, and collisions at home are something we've lived with forever, and from Pete Rose in All-Star Game. But I don't know. What do you think in terms of what they're trying to do, and is baseball changing in some people's eyes, too much from one season to the next?
So I think they're onto something, actually. I think that these guys are not protected enough to take the beating that they do. Coming in, it's not football where you're padded up. So it's just not worth it. The minute catchers, look at Brian McCann. This guy just signed a deal for $17 million a year. You cannot have your $17 million a year athlete getting run over 4 or 5 times a year. You just can't have it. It's just not economically feasible for that player that gets beat up regardless. Catcher's the worst position in all of baseball, because you got to run up and down the line and you got to squat for 150, 60, 70 pitches a game. But in addition, who's the guy that's going to run you over? It's usually going to be the big guy, or it's going to be the guy who is trying to make the team, on the 40-man roster in September. So I think baseball's onto something. The traditionalists will say, why do it? Ray Fosse was the biggest, collision with Pete Rose in the 1970 All-Star Game. But to me, the minute catchers started making a lot of money and they're not protected, take it out of the game. I don't think it's meaningful, right? You protect the second baseman. You protect every other infielder, so why not protect the catcher? So it's a little clumsy now, because how do you really put it down on paper to protect them? But I think they'll get right in the next 2-3 years, and I think the intent is protect the catchers. I think that's valid.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, and it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And we'll definitely probably have our baseball preview in a couple of weeks. Look, things are coming down, right? The spring training games are starting. March Madness in 2 weeks. So let's work our way down. Let's get to the NBA. And I think there's a lot of interesting moves to come. The season, basically, it's, March and then April, and then towards the end of April starts the playoffs. So with about 8 or 9 weeks left in the season, teams, after the trade deadline, they're starting to get their rosters. You're getting guys on 10-day contracts. Usually teams will do 2 10-days, and then if they feel like the guy's going to stay with the team, they'll sign him for the rest of the season. A lot of guys got bought out, and then they're going to go places. And I wanted to talk to you about that, and what do you think? Because to me, I think the Clippers signing Big Baby Davis, Glenn Davis, I think that was a big move. And I'm sort of annoyed for Golden State and Portland for not maybe trying to do it. But, of course, he's going to go play with Doc Rivers, who he had success with at Boston. How how strong of a move do you think that is for the Clippers? The Heat get DeAndre Liggins. We'll see what happens with Jimmer. You know, guys like Danny Granger, you know, waiting to see if the Sixers will buy him out. And, you know, with our caller, Mike, who called in, the Sixers, man, Sixers, Bucks, Magic, Celtics, you want to talk about, you know, crashing games or, you know, losing on purpose. The Sixers, it's brutal. I don't know how fans could go to see the Sixers, but at the same time, they're probably doing the right thing, Ray.
I was about to say, but at the same time, in 2 years, when they're at the top of the Eastern Conference, depending on what happens in Miami and Chicago, then they'll be the third best team in the conference if they can get, you know, maybe sign one veteran and draft people. And Nerlens Noel turns out to be a player, you know, and Michael Carter Williams is the, you know, rookie of the year. So, you know, I hate to see it, but you know what? I can't blame these franchises. You know what would be the interesting thing? Who do the Lakers get? But we'll talk about the NBA draft. You know, we got time for that. But, you know, one interesting note is, you know, Jason Collins signed with the Nets.
Yeah.
So good for him. And we talked a little bit about that, you know, in other shows. The big thing, though, I think, is Nene out 6 weeks for the Wizards. I think the Wizards
that's
are on
hurt.
A roll and going to get the third or fourth seed. And now with Nene going down, they might get set back. And he's going out 6 weeks. He might be out into the first round of the playoffs. So I think that's a big deal.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah, but you asked about Big Baby. And you know what? I ordinarily would have said end of February is a little bit late to add somebody to the roster. So he will have an issue acclimating to the players. But he's played for Doc Rivers. So at least the coach knows him. And the coach was trying, you know, get him acclimated, get him into that rotation. So, hey, great move for the Clippers. Why not, right? I don't want to say shake it up, but bring in a veteran, bring in a guy who can give you some versatility off the bench. And you're right, there's a lot of teams that could have used him. The Heat could have used him. Golden State could have used him. We talked about this last episode, but good for the Clippers for pulling the trigger.
Yeah, I don't know. Where do you see Danny Granger going? Because to me, he could turn the tide somewhere. I mean, being like a sixth or seventh man, you know, playing the three, scoring off the bench, if he goes to the Heat, the Pacers are going to be kicking themselves. This could turn out interesting. I'm not saying he's going to the Heat. The buyout isn't official yet, but it's looking like, you know, Danny Granger could be a big piece in this. And, you know, just the whole playoff run.
Could you imagine if in the playoffs the Heat are not a particularly deep team, but if the Heat could bring off the bench, if they could bring Ray Allen, your boy, Danny Granger, Michael Beasley, and Greg Oden, that's a squad right there.
And kudos to Oden. He got his first start the other day, Ray, in like, you know, what, 3-4 years. I mean, that's, you know, you always want to see athletes be able to sort of play out their careers healthy. And this poor kid has just, you know, never really had an opportunity with all these injuries. So, you know, he played well the other night. Looks like LeBron will probably play on Thursday with a mask against the Knicks. You know, that should be kind of interesting. I'll tell you this, the Rockets and Suns the other night had an amazing game, and the Rockets won. We got to talk about the Knicks last night with Nowitzki at the buzzer. It was crazy. But, it felt like playoff basketball. And I think in the West, Ray, teams are starting to really jockey for position. And with the Suns sort of being now at the eighth seed, the question is, right, we were wondering with Memphis, you know, catch – Dallas, Golden State, or Phoenix. Well, Phoenix is holding on, but they're only up, I think, two or three games on Memphis. So this is going to be interesting with the Suns not making any moves at the deadline. They want to keep that continuity, but could it wind up biting them in the foot, you know, by not making just
what's that Eric Bledsoe situation?
Well, it's looking like he's been sort of practicing behind the scenes, and he might be a week or two out, so that will be good. And I think he could be a huge difference, and that might be it. But then you look at OKC, right? They get back Westbrook and then lose two in a row. But you know that that's going to work out eventually. They just gotta, you know, they just gotta get it together, man. It's. But talk to me about Vince Carter and Dirk. I mean, last night, you know, Dirk hits the sort of a clutch lucky shot to beat the Knicks. But Vince Carter and Monte Ellis, 22 and 23. Vince Carter, 7 three-pointers. I mean, you gotta love when a veteran, especially a Tar Heel, and we'll get to that when we talk to College Hoops, because Ray and Tay love the Tar Heels. But you know, Vince, give him credit, man. He's like Jason Kidd. He's become a 3-point shooter later on and has extended his career. I believe he's in his 15th or 14th season for Vince Carter, and he was an athlete dunker who's now hitting jumpers and coming off the bench and lighting it up for the Mavs. It's pretty impressive. I'm kind of happy to see Vince Carter still playing well at this late age and stage of his career for the Mavericks.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because he had a chance, athleticism-wise, to be a mega, mega elite star. And not to say he wasn't a star, not to say he isn't a star, and good for him that he's extended his career, you know. But it's so funny how guys transform themselves, and some guys can and some guys can't. And really, Vince has reinvented himself, you know, at 6'6". He's got some size, so he's able to play, you know, on the perimeter and shoot. And before, we knew him as a driver, slasher, dunker. So good for him that he's kept himself in shape. And, you know, he's good for Dallas, too. You know, I had my issues with them bringing, you know, another offensive guy like Monte Ellis and having him with Dirk and Vince Carter.
It's been perfect.
You know, how that was gonna fit. But you know what? Rick Carlisle also needs to get a lot of credit because quiet is kept. He's a very, very good coach. And he was a good coach even in Indianapolis. And
He
was a good coach for the Pacers. It's just that he happened to be unlucky enough to be the coach. I believe he was the coach when they had the malice at the palace, you know, that craziness with the artist formerly known as Meta World, Ron Artest. So he was just unlucky enough to be the coach when that whole thing happened. But he was coaching that Pacers team to the playoffs on a regular basis.
Yeah, no, when they, you know, towards the end of Reggie Miller and Ron Artest and Jermaine O'Neal and that whole team.
That whole squad.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. You know, a couple of thoughts. One, Spencer Hawes with the Cavs had a good game. I think the Cavs might make a push to see if they can make the playoffs. That's going to be interesting. The Knicks, Ray, you know, last night, that was sort of the question for me. That loss and just the run they've been on, and give them credit, Melo and the team, they're fighting, but they don't – their basketball IQ, I find it to be really low. I think the Knicks have too many possessions where they don't play defense. They never get out to three-point shooters. You know, teams know, hey, you can, you know, throw the extra pass, and the Knicks, they sometimes switch too much defensively, and then they never get out to three-point shooters. 5.5, sort of almost 6 games behind the Hawks, it looks like the Knicks might be officially done with 24 to go. You know, just to get 500, they'd have to go like 20-5. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, the other problem is, you don't need to be 500 to make the playoffs. I mean, look at Washington's 500, and they're 28, and they're in the 15th. So,
I'm just saying to play, you know, to catch up to the Hawks. When you're 5.5 back with like 24 to go, that's hard.
Well, not only that, but remember the Knicks had an 8-game home streak. So as I'm looking at the standings now, the Knicks have played 31 home games and 26 road games. So that means they got five more on the road. So not only is it hard enough to win when you're losing these close games and you're not executing down the stretch, but you've got 5 more road games than you have home games out of those 24. So that's a problem. Yeah, the Knicks are in trouble. You know what? The Knicks need help. They need the teams around them. The only good thing is that these teams can beat up on each other, right? So Cleveland, Detroit, Atlanta, Charlotte. You know, I might have to save up a couple of pennies to buy my Charlotte jersey.
they're looking. You know what's so funny? And you know what's interesting? You know what the Wizards are talking about signing your boy, your Jayhawk, Drew Gooden, the old veteran that played for the Cavs and a bunch of teams. Drew Gooden might sign with the Wizards to sort of help with Nene being gone. This is the Eastern Conference. The first round, you know how they have all these schedule things, right? The first round might have, like, all four series be sweeps, except for maybe the 4-5, right? You know, it could, but the 4-5 could be, who knows what, Brooklyn, Washington, or, you know, but it could be ugly. The Eastern Conference playoffs could be really ugly this year. A lot of folks could argue this might be a year when you'd want to reseed both the conferences and, you know, really just take, what, 10, 11 teams from the West and, you know, then the best, best five from the East. I don't know if that will ever happen. How interesting do you think that would be for fans? Or to do that, would you have to change the whole schedule to a balanced schedule?
You'd have to change the whole schedule because why have a weighted schedule if the weighting doesn't mean anything, you know?
Yeah.
Why doesn't then you would just have East play West, you know, have every team play each other, whatever. There's no meaning to the divisions. There's no meaning to the conferences.
Right.
So I don't think that'll
happen. Would you be interested
in
that, though, as a fan? Would that pique your interest for competitive balance?
This year it would with the imbalance. Mm-hmm. So of the 16 teams, you know, probably I'd want to go maybe 12 from the West and 4 from the East or 11 and 5, something like that.
Yeah.
But you know what? These things are cyclical. Maybe if this draft is as unbelievable as people say, and let's say in the East you end up getting Embiid, Wiggins, Randall, and all these guys playing on Eastern Conference teams in 3-4 years, as all of the West stars tend to, you know, let Dirk Nowitzki retires and Duncan retires and Kobe retires and all these guys that have historically been great, then you might have it shift the other way. You might have 4 or 5 good teams in the West and then, you know, 8 or 9 good teams in the East. So I don't worry about this stuff. I think in the long run, talent, there's no reason why the talent is better in the West. It's cyclical. It just happens to be that Durant got drafted, you know, by Durant and Westbrook got drafted by the Oklahoma City Thunder when they were, you know, Seattle and then Oklahoma when they were bad. And now they're good. It worked itself out. I'm not too worried about it.
So before we leave the NBA and get to some college hoops, I just want to, you know, mention this too. And I don't know how much this might affect OKC, but Kendrick Perkins is going to be out for about 6 weeks too.
Yeah.
And, you know, with that groin surgery, probably, you know, he might not even come back until the first round as well. Do you think that takes them a hit, or does it help? Percy Jones and some of the other, you know, Steven Adams, sort of logging more minutes up in the front court. Does it really help with, you know, that Adams
might
even start?
It might be a blessing in disguise because Kendrick Perkins, in the long run, they were looking to trade him and get rid of that contract. When he first came over from Boston, it was all about beef and you know, Kevin Durant long and lean, and Serge Ibaka was long and lean, and they needed some beef. But I think in the long run, I don't even know how valuable he is. I mean, what does he play, 10, 15 minutes, and then in crunch time he can't score, and they have problems scoring anyway. So
yeah,
I don't
Nick Collison and Serge
to
play so much, and Adams has played actually a lot this year, so you might be right. You know, you got to believe, though, depending on the matchups, right? If they play the Spurs, you kind of need them. You know, you play the Rockets, you kind of need them. You play Golden State, you don't need them as much. Ibaka can handle Bogut. But, you know, more physical,
right.
Duncan and how about DeJuan Blair with the Mavs? I was thinking about that. You know, the Mavs roster is actually not that bad. You know, give them some credit. They're going to be fun in the Western Conference playoffs. I think they're definitely going to make it. We'll see if they're a seventh or AC, but they're going to be kind of fun this year to see. You know, DeJuan Blair might get some quality minutes.
No ACLs needed.
That's amazing. You
I
know,
can't
that,
believe
that's still,
this
to this day,
without
amazes
an ACL.
Me.
Like, really?
So, you know, let's take
crazy.
A quick break and come back with some college basketball talk. top 25, rankings, games, everything, Ray and Tay.
We're back, and we're back to talk college hoops. March Madness. How many days is March away? What we got? 4 or 5 days.
Saturday, right? First. It's the last 2 weeks of the season, basically, man. You know, this is what it comes down to. Well, let me ask you this, right?
We've had a good season. I'm looking forward to an NCAA tournament full of upsets and some real close battles.
So your Gators are number one, Wichita State's number two, Arizona 3, Syracuse drops down to 4. They had a squeaker win last night over my Terps. You know, I was going crazy. Maryland played pretty well, but just couldn't do what they needed to do. Kansas is 5. Duke, you know, they split last week. They go from 5 to 6. They're 6. Louisville, 7. Villanova, 8. Creighton. Creighton's been tough this year. 9, Dougie McDermott. St. Louis team, 10. Cincinnati, 11. So kind of interesting, and then UVA at 12. Big matchup, Virginia-Syracuse on Saturday, definitely for the number one seed in the ACC. But I wanted to ask you two things, right? Two questions, right? So towards the end of the top 25, a couple teams come back in. North Carolina comes in at 19. You got to like that. New Mexico, who was, you know, hyped up last year and then got bumped out early, New Mexico is at 25. And SMU comes back at 23. So let me ask you this, two things. Number one, right now, and we'll both answer this one, who might you project to be the 4 number one seeds? And then do you see any of these teams like Texas, the Tar Heels, SMU, New Mexico, can any of them that potentially will be a 5 or 6 seed, can any of them make a Final Four run?
This is truly an any given Sunday type of tournament. And obviously the games are going to be played on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But anybody can beat anybody in this tournament. I really believe that. You know, anybody in the top 25 has a really legitimate chance of making the Sweet 16, then winning another 2 games and making the Final Four. So, yes, the short answer is absolutely Carolina at 19. Look, they took out 4 number ones already, or 4 preseason number ones. And, you know, so absolutely. Now, in terms of the number one seed, so here's the thing. I think you got a pencil in Wichita State. I mean, they got to be a number one, right? You're undefeated, and most likely they'll go undefeated all the way through. Even if they lose, they'll probably still be a number one seed. So you got to figure they're a number one. Florida.
But what about
their
schedule? You don't give them any knock on that and their opponents? I mean,
do
you know how good they really are? You know, we're basing it on respect from last season and the tournament a little bit.
You're right, but if you don't lose, what more can you do? I mean, then you start talking about margin, and that's stupid, you know, because a lot of times you'll shut it down. If you're up 15, instead of trying to run it up to 35, you'll put in the, you know, the senior walk-on who doesn't have, you know, any playing time. So especially if they go undefeated in an environment where, you know, Florida has 2 losses. Arizona has, Syracuse has 2. The number 5 Kansas team and the number 6 Duke team have 6 losses. So granted, they're in the Big 12 and the ACC. But look, if Wichita goes undefeated, they have to be a number one seed. I just be a slap in the face. You know, they tried to schedule as best as they could. They didn't lose a game. They didn't lose. I'm not saying they're the best team in the country. I'm not saying that I project them even to maybe even make the Final Four, but you have to at least give them the respect of giving them a number one seed.
Okay.
So at least
so you guys. So give me your 4.
Florida.
Give me your 4.
So I got right now. I got Florida, Wichita State. I hate to do it because these are what they are right now. But Florida, Wichita State, Arizona, and Syracuse. I mean, I think what are now the top 4 are going to be the Final Four because The reason I say it, or the number one seed, the reason I say that is because Syracuse has two losses, and then Kansas, you jump up, and they have six losses. Duke has six losses. Louisville has four. Villanova has three. And then you got St. Louis hanging out there with two losses. But I don't know. I think that these four could even lose in their conference tournaments and still be number one seeds.
Right. So you feel pretty solid about those guys.
Like as of today, right? You know, I still think, and this is what I said to you, Syracuse is going on a downturn, right? When they lost, I said they could lose again to Duke, again to Virginia, and then if somebody sneaks up on them in the ACC tournament, then quietly they have four or five losses.
Well, Syracuse, you got to say this, right? They don't have a lot of depth, and it's not their best, zone defense. They don't have the best length. You got to like Innes and CJ Fair. But if Christmas gets in foul trouble and they got Grant, after that they don't have so much. So they don't score as easily. You know, Innes is hit some clutch shots, but he's not going to, be a scoring machine. And CJ, I got to say, CJ Fair is having a fantastic season. He's really... I would throw him in the candidate with Parker and McDermott for Player of the Year. CJ Fair has been that tough to me.
About CJ Fair, what do you think about him at the next level? You know he's a lefty, so he's automatically.
Yeah, no, he's close to your heart. I would say at the next level, CJ Fair is like a sixth, seventh, eighth man. He's probably going to have to be a three. He's not a starter. I can't put him as a starter, but I think he can definitely make a team and contribute. I would like to see that. So let me give you my four real quick, because I think Wichita State, I got to agree with you. I think they're number one seed, but they're probably my fourth number one. I think Arizona, the injury hit them, but I think they're bouncing back. So I look at the Gators, Wichita, Arizona. I think before they give Syracuse the number one, if Virginia can beat Syracuse and Duke can somehow run the table, I think Duke can get that number one. Or if Kansas runs the table, Kansas, I think, if they can get through that Big 12 tournament and Oklahoma State doesn't upset them, I think Kansas can get a number one seed, and you'll see Syracuse and Duke as the two best, like number two seeds in the ACC. Don't get a number one. They'll be solid number two seeds, and then Virginia could wind up being a strong three seed. So it's gonna be fascinating how they, the 1 through 8 and how they, put the twos with the ones. It's the regions are gonna be fun.
Well, they're actually going to be true to the bracket this year more than they have in the past. You know how they would move a team up a line or down a line, so a four seed would become a three or a five, depending on matchups and depending on conferences,
right, and
whatever.
The pods, yeah.
But they're actually going away from that and sticking more to, strictly the S curve. So if you're a four seed, you're going to be a four seed. Now, within that four line, they might move you around east, west, whatever. But ultimately, the true matchups, we're going to see the true matchups. So that should be fun.
Yeah, I like that. I definitely like that. I guess a couple of interesting bubble teams. St. John's, they needed to get an upset. I think they're going to have to win a game or two in the Big East tournament or the whichever conference they're in. I guess it's the Big East. I would like to see St. John's make. Yeah, no, they're still in the Big East. I was thinking about the American Athletic Conference, AAC. Yeah, but I would like to see the Big East, get in. I thought Wisconsin over the weekend had a big win over Iowa, and now they're at 14. It'd be interesting to see them against Indiana. Indiana's had sort of a rough season, and I wonder if they, obviously Indiana, Minnesota, and the Big Ten, if they can, do what they need to do to sort of bounce back. And, the Big Ten has been beating each other up, right, the Big Ten and the Big 12.
Well, I was going to say, kudos to Michigan, because Michigan beat Michigan State for the second time. They swept them
this year. That was tough. But, this Michigan State is not – it's interesting. They're not Michigan State yet because, like you said on the last show, with all the injuries, when you don't have Harris playing all the games or Payne or Dawson, they're not really who they are. I think fans will be interested to watch Wichita against Bradley tonight just to see if Wichita State could get tested and just to see how they play, you know, how solid they are. I'm interested also, like I said, Indiana at Wisconsin tonight. If Indiana can sort of – I think this would be a big win for them to sort of save their season to make sure they're not on the bubble to win. And then Minnesota's got to hold court at home against Iowa. Iowa's an interesting team because when they're on and they're scoring, Iowa can really upset teams. But, you know, that's going to be a big win maybe for Patino's son in Minnesota. They got to beat Iowa at home tonight to try to, you know, hold things down in the Big Ten. You know, that's going to be fun, Ray. It's going to be fun, you know. So, look, I don't know. For me, you know, we'll talk on Friday about the weekend's games, but you got to look forward to Virginia-Syracuse. And if Oak State can continue to turn it around to potentially get into the tournament. Marcus Smart came back, played well. Do you think they got a final run in them at, 17-10 to maybe make the tournament?
I do. I think that they have a lot of talent on that team. We talked about, you know, talent, role players, stars. They're a good team. They're you know, Bill Parcells says your record is what you – you know, your record is says who you are. So if you're 17-10, you're 17-10. But I think they're better than that. You know, they've had a couple close losses. They didn't execute down the stretch of a few games. So I think that they are a bubble team right now, and a few good wins and maybe getting to a Big 12 semi or a Big 12 finals, you know, puts them in the tournament. So I think at the end of the day, you'll see them in the tournament.
Okay. That's fair.
A shame it would be for Marcus Smart to come back and then not even make the tournament
You really would feel for a kid. But, you know, at the same time, I think all that he's gone through, I got to believe it's going to make him a better pro. At the end of the day, I really believe that. I think it will turn out to be, you know, nobody wants to go through that and a rough sophomore year, yada, yada. But I just think sometimes building inner core and character and stuff like that, I think sometimes it'll mature him in a way that you can't measure. And, you know, I think that'll help him. So speaking of measurement, you think we could run faster than Rich Eisen, man? Rich Eisen, run, Rich, run. It's one of the greatest traditions. It's been 10 years. People send in their videos from work, running in their, you know, clothes, work clothes and sneakers, and Rich Eisen finally broke six second 40.
Six
he got five, what was it, 5.598. So, you know, Ray and Tay might have to do our 40s. It'll be a little rougher for Tay after a broken ankle, but we might have to, you know, do some 40s and let you know how Ray and Tay run the 40. But today it finished up, the NFL Combine, with corners and safeties. And, Ray, there were some bad boys out there. I got to tell you,
I
like the safety.
So
the safety prior is tough. Listen, the kid from Oklahoma State, Justin, oh, gosh, I forget his name already.
But 4.36?
Yeah, 4.37, the fastest of the corners. I think what you saw was last year the average was a 4.49 for the defensive backs and corners. They're getting faster and faster. And what's crazy is that every position this year sort of blew – every like elite player at their position sort of blew it up speed-wise and the different measurables. I think, you know, the fastest was the kid Archer from
ran a 4.26 40 from Penn
State?
Yeah,
that's the kid, Ori Archer. It's D-R-I, Dre Archer.
Dre Archer.
Yeah, he killed it, 4.26. He was just behind
Chris Johnson. That's
Chris Johnson, 4.24. So, you know, that's it's real. It's getting real. And I think, you know, obviously Clowney, you know, he's running faster than most quarterbacks at 4.53. You know, he could probably even go faster than that. We'll see. You know, he'll work out all his stuff at the pro day. The question is this, with the motor, with Clowney, people question, oh, does he have enough, this and that. Let me tell you something. You can't afford to pass on Clowney because he can, you know, for like the Texans, I feel like if you've got to deal with Andrew Luck, you got to sack the quarterback. To win your division, you have to play in terms of, you know, twice a year, Andrew Luck. You got to get to him. You got to get to him. And to me, it makes your secondary that much better if you can only rush four. So if you've got Clowney and Watt, oh, my gosh. It makes it easier to say in my second pick, second round, I'll draft a corner and then I'll sign a safety in free agency. You know what I mean? Like, to me, I don't know if Bortles or Manziel, either one, because what's basically happened after this, most of the guys have said and most of the scouts are basically saying that looks like none of the quarterbacks are day one starters, that they're all like, you know, sort of sit and watch and develop guys. So,
it's okay. We got spoiled with Russell Wilson, with RG3, with Andrew Luck. I'm a big fan of take the clipboard for, I could even give it to you for 16 games, but take the clipboard for 8 games. And figure out the speed and the tempo and learn how to practice and learn how to be an NFL quarterback. I don't need you to start. You
those guys are special.
As a rookie.
It's unrealistic. You're right. Those guys were extremely, extremely special. Same with a Cam Newton. But look at the success of Kaepernick. He sat for a minute. Aaron Rodgers sat for a minute. You know, so and someone like Alex Smith who didn't sit, if he might have sat for a minute, you know, he might have not have gone through all the growing pains to finally get it right in the right system and right situation. So two notes that I want to ask you about the NFL. Number one, so it's interesting, Gonzalez and Bart Scott have replaced Dan Marino and Shannon Sharp in the NFL Today studio show at CBS. That's going to be kind of interesting. You feel for those guys, right, you know, Marino and Sharp. But, you know, change happens in broadcasting and life. And, you know, look, CBS, they need to get Ray and Tay up in there in the studio. But that's a whole other story. We'll talk about that. But you were saying about not always starting right away in a clipboard. So I got to ask you this. There's rumors that the Jets might sign Michael Vick or Josh McCown. Now, you know they draft, what, like 16 or 14? They draft after the Steelers, so I think they're like 16 or 14 or whatever. But should the Jets, you know, number one, take a receiver, number one, and get weapons for whoever's quarterbacking? But number two, in free agency, do you want that veteran to maybe sort of take over like a Vic or McCown? Or do you want to say, like, let me get weapons – instead of signing a Vic or McCown, do you sign Emmanuel Sanders and draft Marquise Lee or Mike Evans and really help Geno Smith? What are your thoughts on the Jets?
I don't want – look, I'm undetermined on Geno Smith. But what I do know is that Michael Vick's not the answer for this team because this team is not – despite the 8-8 record, this team is not close to going to the playoffs and making some hay and making a real push. So don't even bring Michael Vick in. If you want, you could bring in a McCown, you know, a very, very solid, you know, backup who could start on some teams. But you need to answer the question, is Geno Smith your quarterback for the future? And if you've come up with a no, then do something about it. But to me, the question is unknown, is undetermined. So you need to give him a chance with weapons and determine, you know, you give him one more year, maybe a year and a half, and then you make a decision on Geno Smith based on what he's done in practice, based on what he's done on the field. But give him some talent. Give him some offensive talent to do that. Hold on. I think we have a call here. Let's see. Caller, you're on the air. You're on the air with Ray and Tay.
Hey, guys. Mike in Pittsburgh.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
How you doing, Mike?
Good, guys. I wanted to talk some NBA with you. What is going on with the Sixers?
I mentioned it earlier, Mike, and I mentioned your name. It's a mess.
I called about talked to you guys about a month ago, and I was kind of ahead of everyone saying I think what they're doing is borderline crossing the line through the integrity of the league. People call it tanking. I'm to the point I'm calling it cheating. But if Adam Silver is going to let him do it, and he in a press conference said it's not tanking, this GM for the Sixers looks like a genius if they're letting him do it.
Well, what can we say, right? If the commissioner says it's okay, then it's okay. And to be honest with you, I think it's smart. You know, Ray and I just mentioned it, but if Noel and Michael Carter-Williams develop and then they have their pick and the Pelicans pick, and the poor Pelicans can't make the playoffs because of the Western Conference, so you got two lottery picks. And you know, what if that turns out to be McDermott and Embiid or, you know, whatever? But, I mean, it's one of those things where the Sixers could, in 2 years, be back in the playoffs and be a top three or four seed in the East very easily.
And you got Thaddeus Young. You kept the one player that I thought was worth anything in Thaddeus Young, and you got rid of everyone. Plus, all those are going to be rookie contracts. You're going to have money to go out and sign a free agent. I mean, we could see one of the biggest turnarounds in NBA history here within a two-year span. You know, if everything plays out, I don't know what all those second-round picks are going to turn out to be, but I'm sure it's not going to hurt as far as, you know, some trade fillers, and they might be able to throw two or three and get a late first-round pick. I don't know.
Yeah, and think about it. Nerlens Noel, they got the whole year to get him healthy. And then two number ones this year. They'll have the reigning rookie of the year in Michael Carter-Williams. And, you know, Thaddeus Young is a very serviceable player. So, unbelievable, right? I mean,
right. It has the right work ethic and plays hard and can get you points and rebounds. No, you're right. They're doing it right.
I mean, yeah, you're right. If Adam Silver lets them do it. I just pulled up their roster. And the most expensive man on their roster is Danny Granger at $14 million, and that's about to be a buyout potentially. And then the next highest paid guy is Thaddeus Young at $8.8 million. And then after that, they have Jason Richardson, who's got to be coming off the books at some point, at $6 million. So they have nobody on their team that's drawing any salary. And if they're able to draft two great players and Nerlens Noel – all on rookie contracts. I mean, this team, depending on what Chicago and Miami do, this team and Indiana, obviously, this team could be, you know, could be the best team in the East in 3 years.
Guys, how about a team that's not doing it right? Your New York Knicks. I hate to pound my chest here and tell everyone I told you so, but Ron Artest, J.R. Smith, you know, Kenyon Martin, Carmelo Anthony, I said from the beginning, there's just absolutely no leadership on this team, and you got a bunch of players that haven't had the best track record in the NBA. Now you throw away Raymond Felton in with these gun charges, but yet you have Carmelo Anthony playing his butt off, you know, single-handedly keeping him in this game. So I just don't know what to make of what's going on here.
What's going on is something that Ray mentioned, and it's going to be a new hashtag on Twitter that we're starting, and it's Knicks in 2015. And so you just got
to
take a nap, and then you wake up in 2015 and see who the Knicks are. But I'll say this. Healthy Shumpert, Hardaway, and Melo, those three, you know, is something you can build with. I think in 2015 you won't see Chandler here. You won't see Felton or Murray. You know, I don't know. Yeah, Bagnardi, I don't know what else, you know, they can do, but the reality is that they are slowly going to have to rebuild and just hope that, you know, Melo doesn't want to bounce and go to the Bulls and play with Noah and Gibson and those guys and maybe win a championship and that we can keep him. Because I'll tell you this, Melo has had an amazing season. Give the guy credit. I mean, you know, he gets ripped a lot, and I don't know if any player, if we're being honest, right, nobody gets ripped more than Melo, and it's not just New York. He got ripped in Denver, and guess what? Chris Paul hasn't won anything. You know, Aldridge is just having a big year. Kevin Love can't even get the Timberwolves to the playoffs. At least Melo did that, and he's had players on his roster, even though tons of injuries. But, you know, as being a superstar, and, you know, nobody is always going to be LeBron and Durant, but Carmelo Anthony is a pretty darn good player and has played really well. And it's not everything that happens is not his fault. The guys around him have played horrible this year.
I'd love to see him go to Chicago and Thibodeau, you know, a defensive specialist. If anybody can turn around Carmelo Anthony, it's Thibodeau in Chicago with, you know, with a supporting cast like Noah Rose Boozer, you know, who actually won't let him just, you know, come in and do whatever he wants. I think he would buy into that system with, you know, established stars and already a defensive-minded coach, you know, like Thibodeau.
Yeah. No, you're right.
You're right.
Well,
you're right, but there's only one issue with that, is that I don't know if on an 82-game season, and this might be the one reason why Carmelo doesn't go there, if Thibodeau wouldn't grate on Carmelo. Because Carmelo is a guy that wants a little free-flowing, you know, up and down. Think about what he's gone through the last few years, right? Mike D'Antoni tried to make him a point forward for a while. And then Woodson got him to play a little bit of D, but now Woodson can't ride him too hard because he is rebounding every game, and he's playing very hard. But if Tom the three game often and defense and defense and defense, I don't know if that's something that every morning Carmelo wants to wake up to. So maybe that's a good thing for the Knicks fans out there who want to keep Carmelo. We talked about, you know, should you keep him, should you trade him? But it might be an issue in Chicago.
Hey, guys, I know you're running short on time. I just had to throw a quick plug out there, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, go ahead, Mike.
Okay, 1:30 on Friday Eastern time here on Block Talk Radio, I'm having a show called NBA Tank Watch. And I'm having ex-Celtics Greg Kite and Sixers beat writer Chad Ford on, and we're going to have a debate from a players and a team covering the Sixers as far as tanking, and a little Sixers-Celtics mix should be interesting. So it's called NBA Tank Watch, 1:30 p.m. Friday here on Blog Talk Radio.
I love
that. Well, that sounds great, and we'll definitely check it out, man. That sounds great. We'll definitely be listening.
Hey, guys, thanks for the time.
No problem, Mike. Thanks for calling. Talk to you maybe Friday evening when we come on 6 Eastern. So.
And you guys can call into the show if you like, you know, anything you like to talk about. So.
Definitely. I'll take you up on that. Definitely.
All right, guys.
All right, have a good one, Mike. Well, you know, look, we already said it, Mike said it, the NBA is interesting and the draft is interesting, but I got to talk to you, you want to talk about mismanaging and stuff, rosters, I want to talk to you about your Cowboys real quick. It looks like the Cowboys might have to cut DeMarcus Ware. What do you feel about that, Ray? I mean, that could be bad.
As much as it hurts me, you have to do it because he's, what, 20, 22 million against the cap, some crazy number like that. You know, and set him free. Let him go try to win a championship. The Cowboys are in roster or salary cap hell right now. So it's got to be done. I think you got to do it. I think ultimately as a Cowboy fan, you need to just move on from this era because I'd love to keep him, but it needs to make sacrifices in so many other places that I can't put this much money into it.
And you
got to
draft
a
safety. You probably need another offensive lineman. You need a defensive tackle, you know.
Yeah, too many needs.
There's a lot going on there. And the old Panther veteran, Jordan Gross, announced his
retirement
as well. Yeah, I can I tell you, some of these players, man, they play a long time and they do great. And you just wish them well in their next, ventures and stuff in the NFL. But been some great players, you know. Soon, like we said, we'll be, you know, talking March Madness and getting some of this NFL draft stuff going. And hopefully we will get our draft expert and friend to the show, Charles Davis on soon, you know, to break things down. You know, the draft is so far away. What, 72 days? You know, it's because of them moving to May 8th.
May this year.
Yeah. Yeah. So, look, great show, and we'll be back Friday. And you know, Ray and Tay, we're gonna have some fun with it on Friday, man. We'll give you a little Oscar preview, maybe make some predictions, and talk about some of our favorite movies of the year, and maybe our, you know, favorite sports movies and stuff too. Some great ones, you know. Ray's got some comedies that he likes too. some football and baseball comedies, you know, that we both love. So great show, man, and thanks for listening, and you know, just hope everything works out for Ray Felton. Good guy, and Ray and Tay, we wish him the best. And hey,
absolutely.
Thanks for talking sports with friends.
We'll see you on Friday.
We're out. See you Friday. Travel safe, Ray. The Globetrotter.